walk alone. Step by step, day by day, day by day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. And we're going to bring Ryan up for the joke.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. All right, stop me if you heard it. What do you call a drunk that works at an upholstery shop?
What?
A recovering alcoholic.
Mike, thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that might or will distract others. We're ready. Let's get started. We're going to open the meeting with the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, it's right here. God, there is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Gus to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Gus. Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholics Anonymous, pages 567, 568.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode.
Or just turn them off. Tonight, we're fortunate to have Peter M. speak for us. There's one thing he's taught me more than anything. As we go through this process, working the steps, working with others, there's always more work to be done. So if you'd all help me welcome Peter.
All right. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a safe place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank the group for having me back again. I've been doing this thing in Delray on Wednesdays and here on Thursdays. And unfortunately, I sometimes get here and there's very little in the tank come Thursday, plus working in the business I'm in. And some clients are possessed by demons, so it's an eight-hour day of, you know, crazy stuff. That's a joke, guys. Take it easy. Carlos wants to know where I park my car already. put a bomb under it. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. So I'm here as a recovered alcoholic. I'm grateful for that experience. I'm grateful to be able to pass on that information, to get to have an experience like that, that someone new doesn't have to settle for just being a recovering alcoholic, but we can get to the sunlight of the spirit and experience getting recovered. Big Book says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to lengths to get it, if you want, we have to offer and willing to go to any lengths to get it. And there's two pieces to that. And it's interesting because last night I was doing step six, and tonight I'm supposed to be doing step six. And talking to my sponsor and a couple of my elders the other night, the topic has been around this six and seven deal and all the branches of six and seven leading into life and the coming and going of life. And when the Big Book says, if you want, we have to offer and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, there's a couple of things to consider. That we see people living a certain life, the spiritual life, not perfection, but the spirituality of imperfection. We see them living a certain life when you first come in here, and it's attractive, and we want what they have. But there's another piece to that, that I need to do what they're doing currently or have done, that I need to take some action in order for that thing to happen in me. And so it's not going to happen by just going to a meeting and witnessing the great works of God in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It looks really good. And then somewhat with some of us, with some reluctance, I look at what they have to do to get there. That there's a lot of work, there's a lot of chopping wood and carrying water away from the meeting. You know, when they're in their prayer room, when they're writing inventory at 10 o'clock at night, when they're dead tired, when they're getting a phone call and taking a drunk's phone call. Or hearing another fifth step. And it goes on and on and on. And gobbling up information and surrendering to God. And all the chopping wood and carrying water to experience what the book is talking about. Because my experience has shown, just going to meetings, I get to watch the miracles. But how do I get where they are? So I need to take some action. And what we've been talking about, and I alluded to this last night, is, you know, I came in 1988 and bouncing in and out for a handful of years. And the problems I had and my elders had, completely different than what new folks have coming in today. It's a completely different world. It's a whole other universe. When I was coming in, there was no social media. We had no cell phones. We had indoor plumbing, in case anyone knows. You watch TV, and I was the channel changer. When Dad said change the channel, I was the channel changer. And it was different. And people would sit around dinner time at the table, and they would actually talk. They weren't staring at their phone. So there was it was a different thing. And because of social media, we form opinions about the world on Facebook, on what political party I want to join and who's right and who's wrong, just by watching Facebook. And we come in with all this stuff. I've never seen the drug scene so bad as it is now. Right now it makes Harlem in the 60s look like, you know, Disney World. It's really bad. So these folks are coming in much more mature than I did with all of this stuff attached to what's going on out there. Perhaps growing up way before their time. Compared to when I came in, where as crazy as it was a different world, a little bit simpler. And because of the exposure to so much, I think I talked about this last week, narcissism is promoted. You know, get that car, get that house, get that clothes, definitely get that body, definitely get that mate, definitely drink this liquor. And if you don't do any of that, you're less than. I think I talked about this last week, this famous Lexus commercial that every time it comes on I have to write resentment inventory, because it's Christmas time and, you know, the house, the perfect house in a cul-de-sac, no less, and the snow is falling perfectly and the driveway is manicured perfectly. There's no snow on the driveway and there's a beautiful Lexus out there with a red ribbon and, you know, the perfectly white family comes out and he gives her the Lexus for Christmas. And I'm saying, well, what if you're out of work and you're watching that and you're sitting next to your wife? I blew it on Christmas because all I can afford is a dozen roses. And that's going to be a tall order this year. And when we go on our social media or just watch the news or read a magazine, it's about promoting that stuff and inflating the ego rather than starving the ego and feeding the spirit. And that's unfortunately what some folks are coming in with, a lot of that. When I was growing up on my block, for example, or in my classroom, we knew who was Jewish, we knew who was Catholic, we knew who was Hindu, we knew who was Muslim. Everyone knew whether they practiced that religion or not. We knew. Everyone knew. Those kids knew. We all knew. The business I'm in, I get 20-somethings come in. I says, what's your religious background? No clue. I don't have one. How could this be possible? When I was growing up, God was a good word. Nothing wrong. Oh, great. Good for you. God is a bad word now. It's not fashionable. So people are brought in with these belief systems, ideas, and attitudes. Not all, but many, because I've witnessed this. And they have a whole set of luggage to go through that I didn't. That I have an advantage, I don't know. But there's more to deal with. And because of that, they're prey to this wonderful instrument called the mind. Because right now out there, it's be your own man. You know, make up your own mind, things like that. And when we come to recovery, it's the last thing we need to do. And I'm watching all these folks getting better with a certain methodology, but there's a part of me that thinks I can do it on my own. And what we tend to do is we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, or perhaps we even come into a treatment center, and we have to wonder, what are we doing in there if I'm cutting corners and not following the rules? We come into Alcoholics Anonymous, hopefully desperate enough to do anything that's put before us by a sponsor. When you look at a monastery or in a monastic life, you have the elders teaching the new monks exactly how this is going to play out. How this life of poverty is going to look. And when you get out of line, those elders will put you back in line. We do the same thing with sponsorship in here. We have the new person comes in with lots of edges, and the sponsor kind of gets them back in line. This is inappropriate. This is okay to do. This is how we're going to do an inventory, not this way. And if that person's desperate enough and wants what he has to offer, she has to offer, they're going to do that. But how many folks do we witness come in here claiming to be desperate and cutting corners? Not doing this and doing a lot of that. The mind is so powerful that we fall prey to whatever it says. We automatically respond to what the mind says, and the mind is where the warehouse of all these defects of character. There's something called, this woman calls it that I study, the shadow side of the soul. It's the part of me that does not know God. The part of me that does not know God. Little part of me, big part of me, there's a part of me deep down within that does not know God. And in that place is where all my stuff resides and begets more stuff. Bill talks about self-righteous anger, which I hope to get to later. We see a lot of it out there right now watching the news. A lot of self-righteous anger, justifying certain behaviors, justifying certain language. And we can do it, and yeah, I can do it in my own home. It feels good. It feels right. We come into Alcoholics Anonymous, hopefully we're desperate. We're cutting corners. And I used an analogy last night. When I was a kid, you know, we didn't have a computer. There was nobody had computers. NASA, who shot off rockets, they had a computer. You know, you didn't know what a computer was. So what we do at night, we watch TV as little ones, or we do these jigsaw puzzles or model airplanes, and we gathered around and we did stuff like this, as crazy as it was. And we work on the frame, you know, you put the frame together and work in. And my brother would work on the tree, and my brother would work on the lake, and I'd work on the man by the house, and we put all this stuff together. And perhaps you're missing one little piece the size of your thumbnail. It's no big deal, we'll find it later. You put this whole thing together, and you can't find that piece. You now have a hole this big, but it looks that big in the puzzle, and it's useless. You throw it out. That little piece, that little tiny piece that seems so insignificant and so ridiculous to waste time on now becomes huge because it's incomplete. I can do that with recovery. Well, that's not that important. I don't need to do this. I don't have to follow that rule. I can cut back on this. I can start dating with 20 days and get married on 21. What's the big deal? After all, it is me. I know what I'm doing. And then we get to a place where we find this huge hole in the soul that still exists. And after being in here for a little while, we find we're empty. We have nothing. And the interesting thing about, you know, the opposites we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, the interesting thing in this, of myself, I am nothing, the Father doeth the works, nothing. The less of me, the more God. In that type of poverty, is where I find richness. When I think I'm strong, I'm actually weak. When I think I'm powerful, it prohibits me from experiencing God's power. When I think I have no imperfections anymore, then why do I need God? And I'm in worse trouble than I thought. I complete step five. And as I'm going through step five, my sponsors are sharing with me things they see. I'm becoming alert and aware of defects, perhaps I didn't even know existed. The shadow side of me where all they lived, and there was fear wrapped up around all of them. And I see these things coming to the surface. And what I can get into is minimizing, justifying, and rationalizing, just like we do, or I did when I first come in, that this is important, that's not that bad, it isn't that great, is minimize, justify, and rationalize these defects of character that run very, very deep, and look at them as, well, I have a couple of faults, a few things I need to work on. I'll get to it. I'm going to work on the opposite today. I'm going to work on the asset today. And what really needs to be changed is me completely. That kind of change cannot happen, I speak for myself, with the human hand, with a human touch, by the hand of a sponsor. The knowledge and experience and strength and hope of a sponsor is not going to change me. He'll give me information. When a newcomer walks in there, we provide them with information, experiences, our strength and hope, but we can't make them drink the water. They need to do it. These defects of character will not be removed by my touch or anyone else's, but only by God, which means I'm back to another surrender, which I've been doing almost as long as I've gotten here, and as recent as this morning, and becoming a beggar in God's kingdom. Begging for what? Mercy. In my imperfections, in my brokenness. And the interesting thing is when I come clear, really clear, the realization, the aha moment of how flawed I am, I'm a broken piece of machinery, I leak oil, I come to terms with that, freedom begins. The spiritual walk begins. But trying to walk around pristine, what work? And how delusional. In that brokenness, I don't know, just something changes for me where I realize that I'm in a room full of broken people. And that's where we identify with each other, in the brokenness. We can have someone come up to the podium, give you what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Pristine talk, real glossy, real shiny. Great talk. But what's really going on? Where do I lock into the struggles that we've overcome? So as I go through step five, I begin to look at and hear about these defects that I wasn't even aware of. Some of them I was very aware of, but I didn't know the depth of them. And my ego wants to justify and minimize them, that they're not that bad. But they run deep, and they beget more defects. Trying to work on the defects on my own is like trying to swim in quicksand. I can't work on defects. I can't go home and work on my defects. I can't really do anything about them. And the most spiritual men I've met are really clear on how flawed they are. They're not pretending to be other than a broken person with a desperate need for God. And then God will mold and shape and tweak the way he sees fit. That's how I show up to step six, with that kind of willingness. You do with me as you want again. Seven-step prayer is kind of an extension of the third step. I go to the sixth step with a willingness to be changed. Take everything you see fit from me. It's not for me to decide, take this and leave that one alone, huh? We have some questions at the end of step five that Bill talks about. If we omitted anything, we're building an archway to which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have I skipped on the cement put into the foundation? Have I tried to make mortar without sand? Bill's asking the same thing over and over and over again, because each question might resonate with a different person. It makes sense. But Bill's basically asking, am I holding on to anything? Or am I willing to let go of everything? What goes on, what happened to me several times, is the idea of letting go of everything I think I am 12 and 12 talks about being the hole in the donut. I feel like I'm going to be less now, less of a man, less of a person. In reality, I become more of a person, or more real, in quotes, person, a more authentic person, and more useful to other people. But that kind of leap is awfully frightening, because if I let go of this, this is all I know. I grew up with a belief system, the only thing you trust is the money in your pocket, nothing or no one else. And now they're asking me to trust people. I didn't trust people. I had a lot of contempt, pride, investigation, be suspicious of everything, trust no one. And they're asking me to let go all of that. It's a vulnerable feeling. If you feel like a coward, you feel weak, you feel flawed in doing that. That's exactly the point. I am flawed. I am a coward. I am weak on my own. I've said this a million times. I'm not a nice guy. I need to first admit that I have defects. One of the biggest defects we can have, I can have, is thinking I don't have any defects anymore because I went to, you know, Alcoholics and God on Thursday night and I'm good to go. I'm working on my 90. I'm 90 meetings in 90 days, and on day 91, I am now gold. I see a new person coming in, you know, they're back for the 10th time, and I got my 6 months, I'm going, oh my God, there they are again. You know who has the defect right now? Me. I'm shooting the wounded. I need to realize how flawed I am. This is so key, and how deep these things go. The other question is, I did this, and I hear lots of folks struggling with defects. I'm struggling with this defect. I can't let go of this defect. And my question is, it's because, do you want to let it go? Because you don't. There's some sort of thing that goes on that I like the effect produced by this defect. It also gives me an excuse not to be responsible. How willing am I to let go of this stuff? My actions will show it. How much prayer am I surrendering? How much prayer am I spending with God? How much surrendering am I doing? Here's what Bill writes. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. So declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all his faults without reservations, whatever, that's really key. Let go unconditionally, has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to go to the image and likeness of his own creator. Image and likeness of his own creator. It's a nice way, Bill, saying image and likeness of God. That's what Bill was talking about way back when, that I should be willing to grow in the image and likeness of my God. And for some reason, in some of our AA meetings, if you use that language now, they say you're breaking a tradition, you're bringing too much God, and you're bringing religion in God, in AA. And when we study our early history, they had no problem doing that. Why do we do it now? Bill goes on to say something else. He says, self-righteous anger also can be very enjoyable. It is a perverse way we can actually take satisfaction from the fact that many people annoy us. If you love everyone in AA, you haven't been to enough meetings, right? For it brings a comfortable feeling of superiority. Gossip Bob with our anger, a polite form of murder by character assassination, has its satisfaction for us too. Here we are not trying to help those we criticize. We're trying to proclaim our own righteousness. Harsh judgments on others for faults I excuse in myself. So I finish step five, and I go home for that hour. And I review what I've done in the first five steps. And any holes in the armor? Am I clear on step one? Am I clear on two, three, and four? Have I given everything to the paper, and I've given everything to the sponsor in step five? And if I can answer those questions to my satisfaction, step six says, I answer some questions. Now, during that hour time, I review what's been going on. What am I holding on to? Am I holding on to anything? Step seven says we're going to let go of the good and bad. What I think is good might be bad, and what I think is bad might be good, and what I think is good is totally insufficient in the eyes of God. The illness will get me where I think I'm good. Where I think I'm having problems, you know, I'm kind of boarded up against that stuff. I'm lock and load on things that I know are causing me trouble. I'm putting all my attention in that one area. But in these other areas where I think I'm really good, I have no defense. The troops aren't there. And that's where the illness will sneak in and hijack me. And I'm not that bright to figure out how to set up the troops to defend against alcoholism. I don't even attempt that one anymore. My job is, as I did this morning, is a total surrender in my brokenness to this power. Big Book says on page 76, if we can answer the questions on page 75 to my own satisfaction, that's a little bit of a shift. It doesn't say call the sponsor here. It's between me and God during that hour quiet time. Am I okay with this? Can God take them all, every one? I pray he does. In his time and his way. I was sharing last night about this gentleman I knew in New York. Loud, arrogant, challenged people. And he shared how he was praying for this one particular defect, this bulldog kind of mentality he had about recovery, to be removed. And it wasn't going anywhere. The people he sponsored, the men he sponsored, what I call all the roughnecks in AA, those roughnecks that come in and need that sheriff in front of them. That was his tribe, all those type of guys. And the sponsor let him know, like, if that was to get removed, you wouldn't be able to help people like this. That all God did was shave down some of the edges, and any asset taking extreme becomes a liability. God just had to curtail it a little bit so you can continue to be of service and stop telling God what needs to be done. It was a great lesson for me to witness. When I first got sober, I remember, you know, it was almost a petitioning to God. I had a list of defects, and I work with this spiritual exercise of writing down what the opposites are, just so I can get a visual. So honesty. Anger, oh yeah, love, I can see that. But I was guilty the first time around as telling God, give me this stuff. Like God was Santa Claus. And as long as I prayed on that, I figured I'm good. I remember one gentleman telling me, list all your defects, then list all your assets, put them in a basket, pull one asset out for the day, and practice that all day long. That lasted 15 minutes. Because the needed power to pull that off wasn't there. Lack of power is my dilemma. All I'm capable of doing is a surrender, and the only thing that's going to bring me surrender is the willingness to change because I want to get free. That's how this stuff happens. How desperate am I to get well? If I was sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous for 6 months and not doing anything, that old me comes back. That happened to me during my first 6 months in here, acting out in a lot of different ways because I had dis-ease and discomfort in here. That shadow side of my soul was marinating, was beautiful. I had no God muscles. And something happens when the godliness takes hold of a bum like me, that stuff doesn't have the weight it did when I first got in here. In fact, many of those behaviors, many of those attitudes, a lot of that point of view, I actually repel against. How can I even consider doing something like that? Well, there's a time where I was in, with no thought. I can get so attached to living a certain way, especially when we first come in here, attached to living a certain way that I think that's who I be. This is me. This is my story. This is my life. This is how I handle things. It's just what I've become. It's not where God's looking to take me. On page 76, it's if I can answer to my satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We emphasize willingness as being indispensable or absolutely required. Am I now ready to let God remove all the things which I admitted are objectionable? Can God take them all, every one? If I still cling to something that I won't let go of, I ask God to help me be willing. Back to willingness. Over and over and over again, the book talks about willingness. So I'm going through the work a third or fourth time, and something happened to me that I couldn't plan on. Those God winks, those God moments. I was under the belief system that once I embrace God and want God in my life, then everything's going to be just great. And the spiritual walk is challenging. The spiritual walk is not one straight road. It's a lot of nooks and crannies. But one thing about the spiritual road, once I think I have spirituality in my life, I've just lost it. It's when I'm seeking and scratching and clawing, or the chopping wood and carrying water, and I don't think I'm spiritual, I'm probably full of humility and very spiritual at that point. When I'm convinced I'm a sinner, that on my own I will do the things I don't want to do, I'm probably more spiritual in that moment than when I claim to be spiritual and I know what I'm doing. So I get this hour quiet time, and I'm reviewing the first five proposals, and I'm looking at the questions in step six. And during the extra time I had, we were taught to go into sacred silence, to hear and to see. And what came over me was not good. It didn't feel good. More pruning of the tree. As God removes the layers, peels back the onion, it doesn't feel good. It feels like there's something radically wrong, like we're dying, which is what I experienced. And during this quiet time, I began to get agitated. I began to feel anxious. I started to question everything, which is a good thing. I didn't know that at the time. Questioning God, questioning AA, questioning this big book, questioning my sponsor, questioning my entire life. And the great thing about being in prayer and meditation, that kind of practice brings death to every identity that does not come from God. We unhook the shackles that have kept us in bondage, but when we're starting to get stripped of that stuff, we get tight. I do. Uh-oh, what's happening to me? I've never experienced God like this. I thought God was just everything is wonderful. But going through the archway, a lot of things got to get trimmed off. I can't take my defects, if you will, through that archway. So God once again did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And here I am in this moment, and I don't know what to do. I'm crawling out of my skin. I'm questioning everything. I don't know what to do. Make more prayer and then call the sponsor. I make more prayer, and what comes to me, or what I gave God, was, Father, please save me from me. Because that's the guy who's going to destroy me and bring harm to other people. God, please save me, from the depths of my soul. And then I call my sponsor. And I said to him, Mark, here's what's going on. I'm falling apart. I'm in this hour quiet time. I don't even know who I want to talk to anymore. I don't know if I want to go to a meeting. Does this big book work? Is there really a God out there? I'm questioning my entire life. What did I do to my life? It's a complete mess. Oh, my God. I was expecting everything to be, you know, butterflies and rainbows. You know what my sponsor did? I swear, it went just like this. It sounds like you're having an experience, and hangs up the phone on me. I'm so grateful he did just that. The way Silky walked in and saw Bill having the white light experiences, hold on to it's better than what you have, and left him alone. He didn't try to talk him through it, process it. Let's identify those feelings right now, Peter. He didn't do any of that stuff. It sounds like you're having an experience and hung up the phone. See, he was an elder. That happened to him. He knew exactly what was going on with me, because he talked to me over and over and over and over again about experiencing the death of self for successful living, the death of self before the physical death. I had to be convinced that self manifested in various ways with what had defeated me. Well, here they go. They're being pulled away from me. Everything I thought I was, everything about everything was being removed. It did not feel good. I got to the other side of that. It was a Sunday night, and my home was tumultuous at best. I was married to an alcoholic cocaine addict, and she was doing her thing again. A day or two prior, I would have handled it one way, and here I was, still, as Bill says, emotional sobriety in the storm. Not apathetic, not uncaring, not without passion or compassion, but just still in a storm. And I couldn't react the way I normally would. God was doing for me, reshape me, redevelop me. We talk about recreating our life over and over and over again. That's what God did for me. But in that moment, in six, going into seven, I felt like I was dying. I was. Self was dying. It didn't feel good. Speaking to my elders, they were telling me about how our big book talks about recreating our life. reborn. Book uses that, reborn. Not born coming out of mama's womb again, but reborn in spirit. And unless a man be born again, he can't see the kingdom of God. Even if it's in neon lights, we're talking about going and starting this whole thing over again. And what they told me, what we really do in Alcoholics Anonymous, generally speaking, is this rehabilitating of each other. We were good at one time when we were five or six, and then the whole thing, the wheels came off the bus, and we come in here, and you get rehabilitated, recreated. We get reborn. But back to some of the new folks coming in, and maybe some of us who've been around, there's a fancy word, we get habilitated, meaning for the very first time we're getting fixed. It's not, we were never good. And I think about my story, even though I was getting good grades and a really good, gifted musician, my perceptions and conception of life were off. And the more I go through this work and reflect on my life, I can see even at five, the world frightened me. People I was afraid of. Popularity I wanted no part of. I hid under a table during my birthday parties. I ran away when I heard there was a party being thrown for me. I had vengeance towards my parents because they weren't doing what I wanted them to do. It was already a mess. What rehabilitate? I need to start from day one. And the only thing that was going to allow me to get well was a desperation to get right with life, to get right with me. And they told me it was God. And that allowed me to follow directions. And because I'm sober a few years, like many of us in here, it doesn't mean defects go away, because they have friends. And what defects tend to do is put different masks on. So I think I have a greed problem that shows up somewhere else. It's greed again. I think I have a lust problem. I think I'm done with that, and it shows up somewhere else. And what I've learned, one of the most valuable lessons I've learned, as long as I have fear, I have defects, because what generates all those defects is fear, the evil and corroding thread. And that sits deep in the shadow side of my soul. Fear does not know God exists. Fear wants to own my life. And it pushes out a defect here, and it pushes out a defect there. The 12 and 12 says it best, fearful of losing what I have and not getting what I want. Think about that. Whether it's money, property, prestige, whatever it is, don't take it from me, or I want more of it. And this is how I go through life. Defects all over, the glaring defects. You can see them, I can't. Because I'm the last one to make a good assessment of myself. In my mind, I think I'm okay. I deserve this, and I blame you when I don't get it. I'm entitled to this, and I blame you. I'm jealous of you when you get it. And in my mind, I'm doing okay. And like a friend of mine who passed on would say, get a second opinion on that one. Defects of character. Two paragraphs in the big book, 6 and 7. One paragraph for 6, one paragraph for 7. How important could they be? They're vital. Imagine trying to do this life loaded with defects, and one of us are trying to work on our own defects, on our own power. If I don't surrender these things to God and have God deal with my defects, these defects will deal with me. How could I possibly go out and make an honest amends, financial restitution? How could I possibly, this is my experience, go out and make amends when I have nothing going on with 6 and 7? I'm loaded with defects. I'm still resentful at you. I'm still back in column 2 going out to make amends. Nothing's been changed. The spirit has not been awakened. My ego is still flourishing. My ego showing up to your doorstep in step 9, not spirit, touching spirit. Something in the acceptance and the surrender breeds humility, which means I'm right with God, the realization of how flawed I am, close to the ground. I don't need to impress anybody. I don't need anything. I don't need anyone to stay sober. And I'm not attached to stuff. I like stuff, not attached to it. And as long as defects are glaring, I need stuff. I need people. I need positive affirmation. I need a lot of things, but God's nowhere in there. Because God is patient and very methodical sometimes. And I want it yesterday. I want it now. You tell a newcomer, listen, things are bad, I need you to go home and pray. No, I don't want to pray. I want an answer right now. I want it right now. God's too slow. She'll give me an answer around midnight. He'll give me an answer right after the meeting. And we start doing things like that. God is patient, God is kind. And if God is for me, Scripture says, who can be against me? How free do I want to be? What's the depth of my brokenness? Have I come to terms with that? Not by what a sponsor tells me, not by what you tell me, but in my quiet time with God when I'm on my knees praying. Do I have the realization that I don't work? I can't do life on life's terms. That I must, not suggest, not direct, but I must practice fidelity to this God. That is the only thing that counts. Because with that relationship, with that flourishing of that relationship, with that nurturing of a relationship, something happens in the rest of my life. The things that were so important to me aren't so important. They really don't matter. And the things that I was just taking for granted suddenly become vital to me, like friendships, my AA community, my work. Not what I make, my work. And not be prideful or boastful about it. And not be so self-centered where I think the world revolves around me. That's what I suffered from. And that's not gone away. It's gone dormant. And an hour from now, I could be the most prideful, egotistical, self-centered, self-seeking individual right off the podium. That's how flawed I am. I had a gentleman that he's passed on in my life, and he was telling, just a beautiful man, religious man, a leader in Alcoholics Anonymous, a giant in AA. And he shared a story with me. We were talking about, I love talking to other AAs about making amends because it kicks up the amends you haven't made. And talking about what I'm talking about tonight, our flawed character, how broken we are. That's an uncomfortable discussion for most people. The same thing with sex inventory. It's a third of our inventory. Think about that. One third of the inventory is sex. How many topics, not being distasteful, but how many times we go into an AA meeting and the topic is let's talk about sex tonight. Conduct. Not being distasteful, but it's an issue. We'd hardly be human if we didn't have these problems. And he was sharing me, we were talking about the brokenness that we walk with. That turns out to be a beautiful gift from God. In the same breath, my alcoholism turns out to be a gift from God because only because of my alcoholism am I here tonight doing this. And praying three times a day. And trying to bring this godliness into all my affairs. I fall short all the time. That I have some traction in life. A purpose-driven life. It's all because of my alcoholism. That God said, you got this? Now go there. Got my attention. Where alcoholism becomes your gift. When a book says common sense becomes uncommon sense, that's one of them. So this gentleman's talking to me how he went to church. He's a Catholic like I am. Sits through the service, a beautiful service. He says it was just one of those services on a Sunday morning that just lit him up. Because you can go to church a lot of times, it's okay. And then sometimes who's ever given it just lights you up. Whatever they're reading out of scripture, the priest doing a homily just lit up the place. And then he makes his communion. And the most important prayer is right after the communion, and he gets up off his knees to finish up the service, and he's just feeling, as he said, just as light as a feather, how wonderful it is to be alive. With me? As the church, as everyone's filing out, she happened to walk past him. He doesn't know who she was, but she walked past him. And in that instant, he lost everything that just happened to him for the last hour. His mind went, who is she? Got to meet her somehow, some way. And as he's outside shaking hands to the priest and thanking him, he says, and he described it, he's looking at the priest and then he's looking like this. Where'd she go? That quick, full of lust in a heartbeat. That quick. Get up off my knees feeling like Moses, put my hand on the doorknob, defects show up. That sounds like bondage, but once I come to terms with it, that's how I can operate on my own power. There's some freedom in that I just go back to God. We look at us, how am I doing on time here? Okay, a seven-step prayer. It says this, my creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. It's not for me to decide what's good and what's bad. I'm giving the whole thing to God. Same thing we did in the third step. I pray that you now remove from me every single defective character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. I'm not asking God to make me pristine to look good. It's about being of maximum service to God and others. And the only way it's going to happen through a daily life of prayer and meditation and inventory and trying to work with others and having a sponsor, being consistent, being accountable, being responsible, the CAR, the C-A-R, consistency, accountability, responsibility, every waking moment. Because when I veer off that course, I'm back to me running the show and anything is possible. I can get hijacked that quickly. And suddenly there's a drink in my hand. And if I haven't come to terms with that, maybe I need to bottom out some more and realize how easily I am tricked by my alcoholism, regardless I'm sober 1 year or 20 years. Cunning, baffling, and powerful, and patient. The illness will go underground and resurface in other areas, huh? Right? I'm not drinking, but I got a secret sex life going on. I'm not drinking, but I'm spending time in a casino a lot. Like, a lot. Go to casino. Gamble a lot of money, and I'm missing money, and I got to hide it from my significant other. Maybe I'm acting out sexually. Maybe I've developed this food thing. I'm gorging on food and putting on weight by the day because I'm finding comfort in food rather than God. I found a new God. It's called Entenmann's cake, right? Ben and Jerry's, you know. There's comfort in that. There's comfort in my gambling. There's comfort in the sex. And then when it's done, it boomerangs, it cuts me to ribbons. And at some point, enough of this, give me my drink. Give me my vodka now. Let's get this going. How did I get here? How did I get to here? Because the way I go forwards through the steps, I begin to go backwards through the steps. And the interesting thing about doing the steps, they should drive me further into step one and the need for power, not away from step one where I am the power. I can't stress this enough. As soon as I think I own spirituality, I have just lost it. Spirituality is trying to like put water in your hand and squeeze your hand and hold on to it. You lose it. You got to kind of nestle it and take care of it to keep it there so you can drink from it. But if I squeeze it and try to take it, it's all gone. That's my spiritual walk, being really gentle with it. And not claiming ownership of it. I pray that you now remove from me every single defective character stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength. I'm asking God for strength, no matter how strong I think I've gotten, to go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 to grow in understanding effectiveness. And the endurance I'm going to need for the long haul in working with others. Not going to happen if I'm loaded up with me. 6 and 7 at this point becomes the first step for my life. See, the drink is way over there now. Not cured, but it's over there. The substances are over there. And that fire on my butt is simmered down a whole bunch. It's not like day one. What's left of these things, these nuggets that haven't fell through the screen? Envy, sloth, whatever it might be, laying on top. Different forms of anger, different forms of pride, just sitting on top of the screen. And if I don't surrender those to God, they're going to take me. This is my first step for life because those things beget more of those things and they get so painful, so overwhelming. The voices in the head get so loud. I've gotten so removed from you, even if I'm sitting in the first row. Just removed spiritually from you. So remove that feeling of from God. That I'm on my own, and the only ease and comfort I will find is in getting a double vodka right now and drinking whiskey. Okay, now I'm good again. And at that point, the genie's out of the bottle, and you are no longer wanted by me. Because I need to do this now. And that's exactly what alcoholism does. Just get me, Peter Marinelli, to the first drink. That's all it wants. Just get me to the first drink. I got to get him to get one drink in him. Now, if you tell a civilian you had one drink, well, what's the big deal? So you had a drink. The problem is once it gets me to have one drink, it hits my lips, goes down the back of my throat, and all the way in. My body says, now get another. And as our book says, thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. That's how quick. It needs to get me to the drink. And it's not going to get me with, we got to get you drunk tonight, because I'm ready for that. Ah, but the defects of character, the seven deadly sins, let's play with some of those. And little by slowly, just drift away, drift away, drift away, and the noise gets louder and louder, and the resentments grow, and the fear has overcome my life. I'm seeing the entire world through fear. What about me? I'm resentful with people. I'm just in a ball of a mess, and we see people like this. What happened to Joe, man? He's a mess. He hasn't drank yet, but he even looks different. He doesn't care how he looks anymore. He's consumed with self and the manifestations of self. I heard it best. Alcoholism is this way. We identify with our stories. What we're really identifying with is alcoholism. And he described it this way, that each AA member is a car in a big parking lot, just sitting there. And alcoholism has the key to any car it wants to take that night and drives it around. And when it's done, it's done. And then takes another car. No say-so over it. It's pretty frightening. Right after a talk, right after my first, you know, you get your coin, next day you're drunk, right before you get your first year, get drunk, we see that a lot. Who took them out? The mind. What is the mind producing? Fear, 24/7, resentments, all of that stuff. And the shadow side of my soul, where all of this stuff lives for free. That part of me, think about this, the part of us that does not know God. Think about that, those words for a moment. There's a part of me deep down that does not know God. Surrender. God, own me. Own my life. Take my entire life. I don't care where you send me, what you do to me. I don't care. Just own my life. And then God's light shines in every single nook and cranny. I have self-will. I'm going to have hiccups. I'm going to have hiccups. That's my condition. I'm the car that leaks oil. But in claiming that, God, own me. Take my life. Take me like the wretch I am. Do whatever you want with me. Just own my life. I'm giving it back to you. Again, then there's hope. Because in that surrender, in that powerlessness, in that feeling of poverty, there's strength, there's endurance, there's courage, there's richness. Of myself I am nothing. The Father doeth the works. That's all I got, guys. Peace.
Can you help me thank the speaker one more time? And we're going to bring up Stephanie for the secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Stephanie, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Evan to read the recovered statement. Reread this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm Evan. I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship, from forward to second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. May I please see a hand of recovered alcoholics? Does anyone need a sponsor? Please raise your hand. Could you please stand? Come on. Recovered alcoholics, please beat these gentlemen up front. Let's get them back to God. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book study meeting across the way at the Newman Center on the third floor, where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 with pizza, soda, and conversation, and the Big Book study starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Books and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back, and we meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
Again, I'd like to invite everybody Monday night at 7:15 to our Big Book study. We'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. See you all next Thursday. Godspeed.
Doesn't matter. that. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing. Both of when you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. Stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope. Thank you.
with my baby.